I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Let me talk. Hello and welcome to Let Me Talk Details. This is a respite from the weekly whirlwind of top flight football. It's a space to break down the big picture topics and get into the details away from the game-by-game analysis. I'm David Mooney. As ever, the Athletic City correspondent Sam Lee is alongside me.
Hello.
Sam, what is on today's show?
We're diving into the huge game between City and Arsenal this weekend. Lots of chat about the Netflix documentary coming out soon, without any spoilers. And we discuss season ticket price rises at City.
Let Me Talk Details is a platform for you to get involved as well. We'd love to hear from you, so email hello@lmtpod.com if you've got any questions, thoughts or ponderings about City or football in general. Well then, Sam, big one on Sunday, Arsenal, home. Not beaten a side in the top six yet this season.
Well, this is it. So in terms of previews, don't really like doing them. Partly because I think if you're doing a proper preview, you need to really know what you're talking about. Not just this is what this team are good at, but it's this is what this team are good at and might be able to exploit in City. Mm. But also we don't really know. Maybe they don't want to get Kyle Walker attracted inside to something. We don't know. I've got no idea. We're never going to be able to get to that level. But so the broader kind of where are we at? The thing for me is this team has got nothing to prove. I don't want to go down the route of they need to do this, they need to do that. This is an amazing team. What they've done over the years is phenomenal, even though this is a different team now with new players in who haven't won anything with City. This group of players, this team, Guardiola, they don't have anything to prove. But I'd like to see them beat a good team. Do you know what I mean? I've come away from games against United when people are like, oh, that was easy. It wasn't easy. They've had to control United. They've had to manage United and they've played well. But it's that record against the top six.
It's going to happen. Well, you look at it, if we take top six as the traditional top six as the teams that we would lay out, or if you take it as the current top six and you look at you throw Villa in there as well, can they win the league without improving that record?
Well, this is it. I'm thinking now, what I want to see now coming in, because this is the run in, the international breaks out of the way, and now it's full out until the end of the season. This is normally when we see City at their best. So I'm kind of thinking, well, if they're not at their best and they don't beat Arsenal, then are they going to be able to beat Spurs? Are they going to be able to have, Real Madrid, Chelsea in the FA Cup, Brighton on a Wednesday or Thursday, Forest away the weekend after that? Are they going to be able to do this repeatedly if they're not in that battle mode? And if they don't beat Arsenal, maybe they find the battle mode afterwards. Maybe they don't ever find it, but the other teams are dropping points as well. I know people listen to this and think, Liverpool are going to win every game to the end of the season or whatever. But if other teams are dropping points as well, maybe you don't need City to be the City that we know they normally are to win the league anyway. But obviously, because every time they've won the league and they've not already been miles ahead like Centurion season or the behind closed door season, because we've gone into this period, God, they need to win every game. And, okay, in 18-19, they did that. In 21-22, it wasn't quite every game, was it? Because they dropped points against West Ham and Liverpool dropped some points as well. But it was still that feeling of inevitability of you can rely on City, they're going
to
win.
To get
that.
The job done.
And it's just that feeling this season, that isn't there for me.
Yeah, I wonder in that 21-22 season if
Liverpool hadn't drawn with Spurs, if City would have drawn against West Ham, or if they'd have just found a way to be better.
Mahrez missing that penalty was a stressful time to be alive.
But that's it. It's like they got the penalty.
2-0 down at half time though, weren't they?
They 2-0 down at half time. They got the penalty, and Mahrez missed it. But like ultimately, it's a missed penalty. If he scores it, then they've won every game.
Yeah. Exactly. And this is the kind of the margins that we're talking about. But this is it in terms of, like, they don't have anything to prove. But like, in terms of this season, like, if they're going to get to that level, which we think is probably the level they're going to need, especially with two teams, you know, because talk about teams dropping points. You know, if one team falls away like Arsenal did last year, are both of them going to do that? Yeah. Seems unlikely. And then it seems unlikely that if both of those teams were to do it and City weren't at their very best, you know, they'd lost against Arsenal, they didn't beat Spurs, they didn't beat, let's say, Forest. It's unlikely. Like, are those teams going to drop away so much that City can afford to drop that many points? Because it feels like that would be City dropping away as well. You can't say they're going to drop all. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. But also, like, going into the international break, Rodri was kind of like, well, no, like, we normally do come back after the international break. And that is it. And you think, even though we know the reasons why, in my opinion, look, we don't need to go over it again, but broadly speaking, they've got too many direct players. They haven't had those players. You know, Grealish hasn't played, and he hasn't played to his best. If he plays, they'd be more likely to have control of matches. You'd like to think, again, maybe if it's in terms of individual improvement, you know, if teams do have counter-attacks, the defence will make more blocks, they'll make more chances, they'll make more clearances, they'll be more consistent. That, you know, maybe there's that level to go to. But, you know, if Grealish doesn't come back from the injury, if certain other players aren't available, you know, if Bernardo's injured, you know, if Stones is out for any period of time, whether this time or the next time, how does that work in terms of getting that extra man? And if they're not controlling matches in the same way, I think that's why they haven't beaten the top teams, because City can still outgun lesser teams just by being better, but they're not at their very, very best. I had to do an article for The Athletic. It was just like a 150 words thing, like grade them so far this season from A star to F. I was like, well, they're still A. You know, to be in the hunt for a treble after winning one is incredible. And like, they're what, 1 point off the top? Champions League, you know, even though it's Real Madrid, people are still thinking, you know, City should win this, even if it's just based off last season vibes or whatever. FA Cup semi-final again. So it's still A, but the difference between City being A and A star is, yeah, they'll beat Arsenal. But at the moment, I'm thinking that A is, they've got flaws that can be exploited by the very best teams. And we've seen that when they played Chelsea. We've seen that when they played even Spurs, even though they were, again, City missed the chances, but the flaws were exposed. Liverpool was kind of similar. They were much better in the home game.
They had the second but last game
they played. In terms of recent evidence, they're not getting closer to that control. Even against Newcastle, you know, it kind of ebbed and flowed a bit. It was a good game overall, but it ebbed and flowed. So you need those players back. You need Grealish to come back and be the guy. You need Haaland to score his chances.
This is what I find frustrating a little bit from the outside discussion, is that like, people don't take me seriously when I say, actually, the issues that City have this season, what I want to see is this, and you know, a little bit more control of games. Mm. Because the outside impression is City just do this, and there was a Twitter thread recently of City in those seasons after Easter Sunday, and Easter Sunday is the point at which it seemed to always switch, which doesn't actually make that much sense because Easter Sunday moves around the calendar, so it's not like there's no.
Well, it's handy this year that it's this week,
but yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's this week. But that, like, that's the idea that City just like flick that switch, like, I don't know, as much as the evidence suggests that happens year on year on year, I don't know how much you can rely on that.
Yeah, well, I've always said this. Again, I feel bad for maybe repeating the point, but like, I will go and say, look,
we'll look stupid in May if they do it.
And it's like, it's that thing, like, because when people put it to Guardiola, Guardiola's always saying, look, just because it's happened in the past doesn't mean it's going to happen again. And that's literally the truth. Like, it's like you can say, oh, I know this guy was going to miss a penalty, and maybe he does miss the penalty, but you didn't know. Like, you can't know. Like, that, you just happen to be right for the wrong reasons. Like, you can't know that. You can't know that City are going to go and do that again, because there is no guarantee. Because what if the season Grealish doesn't come back fit and Stones is out, and I don't know, like, let's say City have a good end to the season, but they don't beat Arsenal, they don't beat Spurs, they drop points in a couple of other games. Maybe they're 2 points behind, but Liverpool just win all the games.
Yeah.
Like, you can't know that they're going to do that. But at the same time, if somebody wants to sit here and say, look at these stats, mate, they always do it, I can't really stand here and go, no, you're definitely wrong. Like, you can't predict it. You can't know they're going to do it, But if people have got confidence that they will, or dread that they will, if you're a Liverpool fan or an Arsenal fan, you can't really argue, because they do always do it. And when Rodri stood in the mix zone with us after the Newcastle game saying, like, yeah, this is the point where we always click into gear and do it, you think, okay, maybe they just will.
Are they relying on that as well? Is that the thing? Is it a thing of they go, well, we'll come back after the internationals, we'll just be better. That's how it works.
Yeah, and again, maybe it is. And like in terms of like Haaland, let's say, Haaland starts scoring more of his chances. It doesn't matter if you got it. We've said this a lot before. The best way for City to win the league is to get more control of matches. But if Haaland's scoring the chances that he had in those games in February, where City didn't play particularly well, but he had loads of chances, then you're beating Chelsea anyway, even though you're a ropey as hell. I would say an hour, Guardiola said first half, whatever. It doesn't matter. Diaz comes back and he's making the blocks and the tackles. Like last season, Ake doesn't do what he did at Anfield, but other than that, you know, Ake's fantastic. Mm. Akanji goes into what he was in April, May last year. If they're all stepping up, Edison's making the saves he makes against Bayern Munich, if they all step up on that individual level, then even if you're letting more counter-attacks through, you're better dealing with them and all that kind of thing. But I do still feel it's more than them just saying, okay, now we're going to play better, or they suddenly think, okay. Like, I do feel there is a tactical element there, and that is, you know, they're too spread out, they're losing the ball too often, and they're not good enough at winning it back, because Foden's not, he's putting a lot of effort now, but he's not as good at winning it back. And like Doku's not as good at tracking back as Grealish is. It's just a fact, you know. Like Alvarez is not as good at winning the ball back, even though he puts a lot of effort in. He's very good at pressing. He's not as good as you lose the ball as like Gundogan was. He doesn't know where those second balls are going to drop.
Yeah.
These are the differences that you can only get back by having certain players available. And this is why it's funny, because, you know, we've said this about Grealish forever, but like Grealish has been playing this season and he's not always played well. Like December, he had that good period, scored the winner at Luton. Then didn't play the four games in a row, kind of kicked off about that, I think. You know, there's been a bit of that going around it. But it's like he is important for that, because he's just somebody there. And again, it's the obvious example is Anfield. Grealish is playing on the left wing. If Grealish is on the left wing at Anfield and has a shit game, it's probably a greater net contribution than Alvarez, because Grealish's shit game is not losing the ball as much. You know, maybe it's a bad example, because against Liverpool at the Etihad, he literally did a turn around on the left wing and gave it to like somebody to break away. It was awful. But like Alvarez's shit game is just giving the ball away in stupid situations. Like Grealish is not going to make those decisions. You know, maybe he's running against the fullback, doesn't do anything, passes it back, and it's just, if people think it's a shit game, but actually he's doing the job. But whatever. Like if Grealish is on that pitch at Anfield, you haven't got that massive weak link on the left side of the pitch that they did have. And that's the kind of thing they're going to need. Obviously, now we're talking, so we're recording this before the Arsenal game, but it's what, Wednesday morning when we're doing it. We don't know about Stones. But look, again, this might be completely irrelevant if people listen to this Friday afternoon and Guardiola said, yep, Stones is fine. Mm-hmm. And Stones plays. But like, even just to float the idea, if Stones comes back with a knock, you know, it's an Arsenal game. But if Pep's thinking, yeah, but I know it's Arsenal, but we don't want him to miss Real Madrid. We don't want him to miss whoever's after that. We don't want him to miss whoever it may be, Chelsea in the FA Cup. I mean, they'll obviously be prioritising other things by then. Don't rush the guy back. And then it's funny, because
there's an element of you look at where City are in the table, and if they don't beat Arsenal, then the title is out of their own hands. But it's already out of their own hands, because Liverpool are miles ahead. Oh, not miles ahead, but they have it. They have the control of the title at the moment. If Arsenal beat City, that's two teams then that are in the pecking order ahead of City, having the control. City could then win all of their games and still finish third.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the things I think about, you know, from my job point of view, is how do you manage this situation if City lose? And that's, you know, on the way in this morning, we were talking about that Brentford game before the World Cup. Like, how do you write an article there when, you know, at that stage of the season, City weren't quite at their level, people wondering what's going on. But like, ultimately, losing a game like that, it's a shock, but it doesn't have to be the end of the world. Like, where do you pitch that? But like, when it's this time of the season, there's the particular demands of what gets written in football media, what fans say in football media. How far do you go down the line of, because I'm normally, you know, that Brentford game, my default reaction is, doesn't really matter. Mm. Like, they're going to lose a game in a season, whatever. And the amount of times we talked, you know, that Palace game where it was 0-0 a couple of seasons ago, and everyone's like, oh, Liverpool are going to, like, look, the momentum can change so quickly in football, it's not worth worrying about this result, because things will change, things can get different. This City team will probably get better. But then you think, if they do lose against Arsenal, how do you pitch that? Because everyone's going to be saying, and again, I want to push back against that immediately. Everyone's going to be saying, oh, you know, can City win the title this year? Is the title race over? Because, you know, people just forget that, you know, next week Arsenal could lose and City could win. And then we're back where we started.
Back to square one,
but then you're talking about, oh, have Arsenal got what it takes, blah, blah, blah. City, you know, people, it's that Men in Black pen thing. People just forget that this is how title races work. So I want to push back against that talk of, or is it a crisis for City? But also, I would be thinking, but at the same, when is the real City team going
to
stand up?
That's it. But at the same time, in that dynamic, what happens if City lose to Arsenal at the weekend and then the results are flipped the following weekend, City or midweek, City win and Arsenal lose, but Liverpool win them both?
There is that thing as well. It's like when, it was when I was away, Arsenal beat Liverpool, didn't they?
Yeah.
Like in February when I was away. And then City beat Brentford on Monday night, and everyone was like, oh, well, it's obvious. Like, everyone was doing that kind of, oh, well, City are going to win the league then. You know, that there was that article in The Guardian, like, oh, they're on their way to their double treble. What does this mean for football? It's like, everyone's writing this and thinking this on the basis of, well, Arsenal beat Liverpool. Everyone thought Arsenal can't win the league and Liverpool can, but they've lost, so Liverpool must be shit. Arsenal haven't got what it takes. Oh, City have beaten Brentford and look good. So that's it, finished. But that's it. Like, you just look at the other two and go, but then you discount it. Yeah, let's say City win this weekend or lose this weekend, and then, yeah, the results are flipped. But then you've got Liverpool. Like, people are going to have to accept that. People can't even handle it when it's a two-horse race. When it's three, like,
God help
nobody's sure. But I remember when City beat Arsenal last season at the Emirates. I remember saying in my match report, you know, the way City played this weekend, you know, just, you know, for argument's sake, maybe they'll lose to Forest at the weekend. And somebody in the comments was like, oh, they're not going to lose to Forest, are they? Like, they fucking drew, didn't they? Like, it was ridiculous. They should have won 5-0. But they drew. And that was the point where you think, this is why all this... Because the reaction when City won at Arsenal then in February was, oh yeah, you know, this is what we thought. Arsenal are going to cave in, City are going to go and win it. But then they go and draw the next game. And then look, then they go and win all the rest. But this is it. You can't, like, in terms of the reaction to this game, how do you pitch it if City lose? But then I've got Guardiola's words ringing in my ears. Everyone says, what if we lose? What if we win?
Yeah.
But then I'm thinking, my own point of view, if they do beat Arsenal, then even I'm thinking, they're fine. They're back. They're fine.
But at the same time, they can beat Arsenal and Liverpool win all the games. Yeah, doesn't matter, yeah.
But also, it's like, you know, when they played Liverpool in that 21-22 season, it was after that Palace game, and then you were like, oh, it all comes down to that Liverpool game. I was like, no, it doesn't. This is like April the 10th. So, like, if City had won that game against Liverpool, you'd go, oh, yeah, great, this is it. But you wouldn't be any less nervous when go to Brentford away, to Brighton away, to whoever it is, and this would be the same thing. They can beat Arsenal, and you think, oh, this is City in battle mode. But people telling me they're not going to be nervous when they go to Spurs.
No, in fairness, my position on that was always, I want to go into that Liverpool game knowing that if they lose, it's still in their own control. And so when I'm saying it's all down to that Liverpool game, it means that now they have to get some sort of result out of that to keep control of it, not to win the league. They could have lost that game and still won the league. I wouldn't have been that confident, but I want the control of it. Yeah.
Like, in the media, there was so much build-up of, this is going to be the title decider. It's like, there's five, six games left after that.
Because I'm interested this year again, if City do beat Arsenal this weekend, then they're still chasing. They still don't have it in their own control. And City have never been in that position for I don't think any of the titles they've won, they've been in that position since like 2012, when United had to drop points in order for City to get back into it. So, you know, I think of that, and I think of the dynamic of that. I actually think that's quite an interesting challenge for Guardiola, because the control is not his. If he wins every single game from now until the end of the season, he's still reliant on something else happening elsewhere.
Yeah, and you've got that element of, you know, we're talking City to get back to their best level. It's not they need to keep doing this. It's that they need to start doing this.
Yeah.
Or they need players to come back in and start doing this. So it's like, it feels like there's a very small pool of players available and they already haven't really got them. But let's say Grealish gets another injury and it's like, all we've been saying is Grealish needs to come back in the team. What if he doesn't? And, you know, what if Stones gets another injury? Like, there's a very small pool of players. And again, I've always said, and I feel like City genuinely are at their best when they've got to say, it's Real Madrid, then it's Chelsea, then it's Brighton away, then it's Forest away, then it's Bayern Munich away or Arsenal away.
Get on with it.
They just do it. But it's like, I feel, and maybe they will, but I just feel like you know, I think it's my confidence in the team at the moment is affecting how I feel looking into this run, because they always do that. Mm. Like when I had to put that article together for The Athletic a few weeks ago about they're going to play this game then, but this might be moved because of that. And then this game, if they get to the Champions League, it looks like it's easy because it's Luton away is the example, but it's between the two Real Madrid games. So he's going to make changes. And then we were just saying about this relatively small pool of players. If those changes result in the team not being very fluid, you can have problems again, like we saw against, you know, Leicester after, you know, with 30 minutes to go.
Was it Palace a few years ago?
Leeds got a bit dicey.
Was it Palace a few years ago where they won, but the performance was batshit insane? Where, like, I think Ferran Torres and Aguero was in his injured mode, and he played, and I think he scored. But the performance
that was when
just
the league was pretty much wrapped up.
Yeah, this is not a classic City performance.
No, and it was very much a, these are the 9 or 10 guys who are playing in the Champions League.
They ain't playing
you
today.
You lot do the rest. And it was one of those kind of performances. But again, you know, they've had Palace away after that Spurs Champions League game when it was like, well, we're going to keep some of the guys back. We're going to keep Sane back and De Bruyne back for this Palace game because it was a different dynamic. And again, like even, you know, we're talking about like Real Madrid, Chelsea, Brighton, Forest, blah, blah, blah. It's Arsenal, Villa, Palace away.
Yeah.
Real Madrid. And then it's all that. Then it's Luton, then it's Roman. Like this, it just starts from now.
That's what
it's a hell of a run.
But like, that, I think but that's the Arsenal game is the biggest game of the season until the next game. Yeah, exactly. That's how this it works.
I think I put in the article like, in terms of the A star and the A or whatever. I was like, they've got a massive April coming up, but it's the same as last year. Like I think Guardiola was like, before the international break last year, it was like these three games will decide what we can do for the rest of the season, because it was Leipzig in the Champions League. Obviously, if you lose that, you're not in the Champions League.
Burnley
it was Burnley in the FA Cup. So if you lose that, you're out kind of thing. And then whatever the Premier League game was beforehand, just to keep in the race. And it's like, yeah, they define what you can do for the rest. But then if you beat Real Madrid,
you've got to do it all again.
And then you beat Sheffield United, you've just got an even bigger May. And that's the situation again now. Like April is a mental battle. Like the fixtures I've just reeled off. And again, when I was doing that article going, oh, they got this and they got that. My confidence in the team now is, I don't know about that for the reasons we've just mentioned. But again, if they beat Arsenal 3-0, which again, I'm not massively confident will happen, I'll start to think, yeah, bring it on. You know, if they play like that again, you know, this hypothetical situation where they play really well, control it, I go, well, if they play like against Real Madrid, which they can do, they'll go through. But again, you know, I think the Real Madrid game, we haven't really talked since that draw was done. Not about Real Madrid. I think that'll be more like the one 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Than the last one, because that could be chaos at the Etihad. You know, they might not turn up and steamroll them and put in the best performance of all time and beat them 4-0. They might play great and it'd be 4-3. And obviously the whole thing about the Etihad, it should have been like, you can't say 6-3 because there was chances and missed and then they did that. But like, how many chances did City have to go 2-up, 3-up before Madrid pulled one back? And it just kept happening. Like, that wouldn't surprise me. If you talk about the Spurs game at the start of the season, the Liverpool game, if they don't sort out that issue with second balls, with like leaving space between the lines, with counter-pressing, play like that against Real Madrid, they're going to score 3 goals. Mm. But because City are so good, they might score 4.
And then
what's the away game going to look like?
I was going to say, that's exactly it, isn't it? It's not that they can't do it. It's just that it makes the job so much harder. Yeah. And you think of those games in between, and you like talk about Palace away, for instance. If you were in a situation where you can get 2-0 up against Palace and be safe and secure, then it means that the final kind of 10, 20 minutes of the game, you're not having to dig in, you're not having to do all the hard and dirty work that then has the knock-on effect in later games. If you're not anticipating the second balls as well, if you're conceding chances when, you know, and hanging on when you need the points, suddenly that knock-on effect is that you haven't had an easy final 20 minutes, and then you haven't had a final easy 20 minutes 3 times in a row, and suddenly the kind of the building blocks, but the foundations of the run is not quite as stable as it was previously.
Yeah.
And that could be the difference between ending up drawing 1-1 or winning 2-1. I don't know.
Well, this is the thing. Like the two times they've gone to the Bernabeu in the last couple of years, obviously there was the one that ended in the disaster. And there was the one last year where, you know, like nothing happened. Mm. Obviously it was 1-1, but like City were like, we're going to go there, 1,000 passes, kill the game. And then, like I said before, I'd heard that, you know, they're actually, they didn't want Bernardo to run at Camavinga because they wanted them to think this is going to be an easy matchup.
Yeah. And then rope-a-dope. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they switch it on at the Etihad. But like, you know, if the alternative, Alvarez has to be on the left at the Bernabeu, or, you know, Alvarez plays in the middle and someone else plays on the left, and you can't go there and shut up shop and control the game, because it's like other than that, how was the play scenario? Like, other than those two Rodrigo goals in the last minute, like City did kill that game completely. It was a perfect performance. But like, are they even capable of doing up until that disaster at the end? Are they even capable of doing that at the moment? If they've got all the players you played at Anfield, but let's say like Alvarez on the left or the equivalent, somebody, you know, let's say it's Doku, and you know, maybe Doku plays and he sets up two goals and he scores one and it's fantastic. Maybe Doku plays and he doesn't really do a lot and there's loads of attacks coming down his side. Like, can they do that game at the Bernabeu where they shut up shop, or do they go and lose 2-0 and then you think, well, fuck. I mean, I'd still think, coming back to the Etihad, of course they can do this. But then if it ends up being 4-3 again, it's no good to them. So this is the thing with this Arsenal game. I don't want it to be too big and I don't want to go overboard in either direction if they win or they lose. But I would still tend to think more, if they were to win, they'll be all right now. This gives me confidence. But then I suppose it's the flip side of the coin, is if they lose, I'll be like, I still don't really have that confidence.
Yeah.
That they can do what they need to do. Yeah. You know, they might play brilliantly against Real Madrid like they did 2 years ago. Over 180 minutes, so fantastic, but still go out. That might be the difference now.
Yeah, I visualise it like climbing a mountain. You've got to get over this next bit of the mountain to climb to the top, but then once you've done it, you still have to keep climbing over the next bit.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, again, this just goes back to the achievements that they've done in recent years, and you know, the backdrop to the charges, and you know, with the charges, it's like, I think technically speaking, it's like 4 or 5 charges, but like 115 breaches, which is like, doesn't really matter, but.
Well, it's count. Is it like counts? Like
yeah, like exactly.
115 counts of 3 charges or whatever it is. Yeah.
So the backdrop of that, or you know, obviously, like with the documentary, it's like, oh, it's just like City PR. And, oh, fuck it. Oh, yeah, of course it is. But like, what are we going to get from that? And like, look, the thing is with the documentary, so I've seen a couple of episodes because there's like media access and like there's no spoilers to give because what? They were 2-0 down at half time against Palace and Haaland scored a hat trick. Like, there's some nice bits in there that the fans will like. Mm. But like, my point of view going into it is like, what I want to see is like the mechanics of that team and like in like the dynamic on the training ground, which you do get a bit of. You know, when Izzy was in before saying like you got to work against boredom, and it was around that time she said that there was that video on Twitter and Instagram of like Guardiola not being part of that fun. Like, there's loads of like the sessions just being fun. You kind of see the building blocks of how they keep things fresh and dynamic and all this kind of stuff. Like, I do want to see more of, you know, what Guardiola's telling the players, and like when he's telling them like you don't play the ball here, but here, yes, but it's like the camera's behind the tactics board. Like, obviously, they're not going to show that. But it's like, that's what I want to see. But also, like, the thing is, like, I think people who work in sports media are naturally against sports documentaries because obviously you've got the element of this of people like, oh, like show the boardroom when they're like burning documents or whatever. It's like, what are you expecting to see? But When I think like Full Swing, the Netflix documentary came out last year, the first one, I saw like a golf journalist saying, oh, this is shit or whatever. And I watched it and I was like, well, I'm interested in golf, but I don't know the people.
Yeah.
And I was like, I thought this was good because like, there's loads of stuff that went on here that I don't know. I didn't remember who won the USPGA last year. So when they're telling me that story, I was hooked on it. Like, I got to know some of the golfers individually, their lives and stuff. So I thought that, for me, that was really good. But again, for the golf journalist, he's like, well, I kind of know this. I want them to tell me something else. Mm. And I'm not saying like I'm the most clued up guy on City. I'm not saying like I'm going having, I was going to say beers with Nathan Ake, like doesn't drink. But you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I guess the example, and there's no spoiler here because I've not seen it yet and I might be wrong, but that treble season, one of the big dramatic behind the scenes things is the Cancelo situation. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm wrong, maybe it is in there. I bet there's not footage of Cancelo moaning about Rico Lewis.
Mm. Or having his AirPods in for...
Yeah, or like, you know, the argument with Guardiola, like these kind of things, like it's not going to be in there, is it? So you will, like City fans will love it in the sense of you see the players laughing and joking with each other. But like, it's very much kind of set up for that like American audience where I was with Full Swing, where it's like, you're explaining this to me like an idiot because I don't know. You know, you've got Henry Winter saying how the Champions League draw works and everything is built, like Nadim's on it. Mm. And he, like, you can tell the brief is very much, can you explain this? Like, and... Because I get this feeling with The Athletic as well. It's not just explain this to an American, but it's like, can you explain this? It's like, can you explain this to an idiot American? Because like, it's almost like, oh, like how many people watching that documentary in America will watch it? Mm. Because they fucking like football. Like, how many people listen to this because they like football? But it's just like, we need to sell this to America because we need to sell it to the people who have no idea about it. Mm. But it's just like, how many people who've got no idea
are actually
are that bothered anyway?
It. Yeah.
And it's like, why do we have to kind of cater to them so much when there are people from America and like every country who are watching it and they do know about it, and it kind of takes away that experience. But then, yeah, I'd like to see, like, the problem I've got with these things is like, you don't see enough more of, because, you know, we've got a fair idea of what's going on. I wouldn't know if that's 40% or 20% or 5% or whatever.
Of what
but,
is actually going
but, like,
on.
But I'd
yeah.
say, obviously, like, as a journalist, we probably know a bit more than most but people listening to this.
But
we want to know more. Like that Cancelo situation, we roughly knew what was going on at the time, and that was reported at the time, but there was more stuff we were waiting to report until the end of the season. So that we knew before the public knew, but it was like, I want to see more of that, but that's never going to go out, is it?
The counter-argument to all of that, though, is how many times do you do kind of general football podcasts or football shows, and how many times do I go on to opposition shows and have to correct what the perception is about City? So you look at what a documentary like this is going to do. It's not going to City fans. It's going to a general public audience.
Yeah, it is. And again, that's what, you know, there's some articles I'm writing. Like when I wrote about the season tickets this week, which we'll talk about in a bit, I felt myself outlining, like, I mean, you should have done this anyway on a factual basis, but a lot of the things I do, and this explains probably what I was talking about a minute ago, a lot of the things I write, like, I won't just put in the basic facts, because like, I'll assume you know that anyway. Like, if you're reading my article about City, and this is wrong, because you should treat everything like people are reading this for the first time, but it's like, if you're reading my article for the first time and it's like a basic fact, I'm not going to like include it. I'm not going to waste words. Well, I've got loads of words here that I would like to try and add insight with. But like with the season ticket, I was kind of like, compared to the big six, I was like, I better put in who the big six are. I better put in the price of the season tickets. Again, I should have done that anyway. But it's like for an American audience, and it's not whether they know nothing about it or they know loads about it, but it's like for an American audience that are used to paying, like, it's not when US artists come over here and they charge like 150 quid a gig. It's like, we ain't paying that over here for that. Like, we might pay like 80 quid for like the big like British artists. And that's a lot. Like, I went to Drake a few years ago and they were fucking giving tickets away. Like, we were right. I got like some of the cheapest tickets there right at the back. And the guy was, he's had like a proper wad of them. And we got to like right with the first few rows of the sitting bit. And you probably maybe could have gone in standing if you wanted. But it's because like they're not selling out. Yeah, like,
no one's paying 120 quid
and, like,
to
I remember
stand.
We went to like Taylor Swift at the Etihad because my wife used to work at the hotel where she was staying. And like the hotel staff were getting loads because like no one's paying like 150 quid for like an arena tour kind of thing. And it's that kind of thing. So I felt the need to kind of like knowing that there's going to be an American audience here. But there was that element of, when I say the big six, I need to say who these are. Because you might look at the table and go, what, Aston Villa? Because, you know, they might not necessarily know that Chelsea are in it. But there's loads of kind of, extra. In the documentary, it's good because the fans will like it. Because you're coming in, you're seeing the dynamics of the team. I'll like it in the sense of, because look, they've got to show the highlights of the games. But it's like, I remember that game. I was at that game. Mm. And it's like, I don't need this. I don't need the fucking Champions League draw explained to me. But again, I know why that's got to be in there. But it's like, but there's little bits in there where it's like, oh, Guardiola. Like, but again, it's not new. But it's like, oh, Guardiola really is mentioned in the dressing room or on the training pitch. Like, we knew that anyway. But this is just another example of it. But there's just little bits in there. It's like, oh, that's good. Because the thing is, the whole point about sports journalists and stuff being down on documentaries like that is, I thought the Amazon one a few years ago was good, and the City Studios ones, like the ones from 21-22, I think they're quite good. But I think the problem actually with the Netflix one, if they've had to put in so much extra shite that we don't need as fans. Mm. I don't need it as a journalist. You don't need it as a fan. You don't need this extra, oh, you know, City just signed Erling Haaland, and actually he's really good at football. Like, it's not quite as basic as that, but they do have to lay out everything.
Yeah, yeah. So if it was a City Studios production, like, for City TV,
it's taken an extra,
what,
6 months to come out, because obviously they were doing the extra stuff for Netflix because they've gone, well, this is going to be the audience. Well, we need to add this in. Like, I've enjoyed even, you know, saying, like, I want to see a bit more of how it works. I've enjoyed City Studios documentaries in the past because I feel like, oh, that's good. That's behind the scenes. Mm. And it's good just to see how the players get on, how they interact and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, but it doesn't hold the club to account.
No, it doesn't. But that's too interspersed. Oh, fuck it, make your own. like, who's going to make that otherwise? It's interspersed with stuff that, like, we already know. So that's a kind of impromptu review of what I've seen so far. And again, by the time it gets to the end, like, oh, that's really good, but like I say, I've only seen two. But there's just a lot of, like, well, we know that already. But the little bits of, you know, what Guardiola's like and what he says to the players, There is one thing, I'm not going to spoil it because I'm probably not allowed. But you know, after you know the Fulham game when they went down to 10 men with Cancelo getting sent off, we were like, that's fucking unbelievable performance. And like, people might not understand this, but that was unbelievable. When you see Guardiola's reaction to that, you'll be like, that was the one.
That was the one, because I remember chatting with you and Paul about it, about how that the players were still there and helped.
Because I think he was pretty much decided anyway, but he was like, yeah, we're doing it.
Yeah. But like, the lap of honour as well that they did after.
It was just, again, like, you just look at that 3 p.m. on a Saturday, you see the result come in, City scored at the end, you go, oh, lucky bastards or whatever. Go, fuck, the effort they put into that. Mm. Because again, you know, Guardiola's point was, it's not just about the talent, it's about the running and the effort. And
like, although if I remember rightly, De Bruyne did get into completely the box and go, one penalty, please.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, fair play. And yeah, it's like the Doku non-penalty. The Doku, because we've had the mic'd up thing, haven't we? The Doku non-penalty at Anfield. Like, so funny when you hear the audio. It's like, yeah, well, Doku challenging for the ball. Like, McAllister's coming to his space. There's like, people are going to hate that. But they basically just decided that they're not re-refereeing the game. The ref didn't give it. But like, if he had given it, it would have gone the other way. But it was quite funny that, it's interesting, isn't it? Because the ref hasn't given it, it was almost like the referees and the VAR were looking at it from the perspective of, well, he's not given it, so let's look for reasons not to give it. Because you know how you were saying, like, McAllister's coming into his space. He's like, would they? I mean, maybe they would have. And again, hopefully when there's the next PGM or they'll explain a bit more. But I feel like if the ref had given it, they might have been like looking for reasons, oh, we do need to give this, because they don't want to re-referee it. I'm still thinking maybe they're looking to stick with it on the pitch for whatever reason. And like, when
that's interesting, because I see it from the other side of the of kind of that same coin, I guess, where I feel like they're looking...
We mentioned sides of coins on every fucking episode.
Yeah, I know. I see it from the kind of other side of that banknote, that it's almost like the VAR is going, okay, so the referee's given it. If we're going to overturn it, we need to provide some hard evidence that he's wrong.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it is. And so ultimately you get those decisions where if he'd given it on the pitch, you couldn't provide the evidence that he's wrong. At the same time as he hadn't given it, you couldn't provide the evidence that he was wrong for that either.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that probably the same thing, is the case, but it feels like, you know, just when I heard, you know, if I was a Liverpool fan, God forbid, and they'd said, like, McAllister's coming into his space, I'll be raging. Because I don't think, has anyone thought about it in that sense before? Like, that feels like something that a City fan would say on a podcast like this, or like the overlap, just to like wind somebody up. Like, Doku's challenging for the ball, but then McAllister comes in while Doku's trying to clear it. Like, I feel like, never mind a Liverpool fan, I feel like Klopp would go mental about that.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like a strange thing to do. And you just wonder the psychology of, because Howard Webb was saying, look, we don't want to re-referee the game. That's one of the things. And like, my point is, that's what you're fucking there for. Like, obviously, on this occasion, it worked very well for City. I would not have liked to have been in that stadium when Salah had scored a 98th minute penalty, 100th minute penalty. It would have been disgusting. But like, on a general point, we don't want to re-referee the game. Fuck off then. Like, why are you there? Anyway.
How was this Arsenal preview via the documentary turned into VAR chat? Yeah, I don't know.
Well, we're just kind of covering stuff that has happened. Come up. Yeah. Since, but yeah, anyway, the Doku thing, like, just the thought of he's come into his space is very funny, because it's like, well, is McAllister not trying to attack and win the ball, and Doku's the one with the high foot? It seems, that just makes you think, like, because they're not re-refereeing it, whatever our thoughts are on that, is the mentality, okay, well, he's not giving it, so let's just like have a look. And it's not even a conscious thing. We know it's not that thing that like Richard Keys would say, if he's trying to bail out his mate, etc. Like, it's not that. It's just the subconscious kind of, well, he's not giving it. I wonder what his like frame of mind is for not giving it. And you go, oh yeah, it's because McAllister's doing that. But if he had given it, you go, why is he giving that? And you go, oh yeah, because his foot's high. And it's just like a sort of mental difference. I wonder if that's a thing.
Yeah. Well.
Anyway, Arsenal.
Yes.
So last weekend, I was messaging Nadim. So it was after Walker got injured. And he messaged me, actually. Then he was saying, is Walker's injury that bad a thing? And I was like, feels like the kind of thing I would say to you and you'll take exception with. But like, you know, when Walker got injured last week, I was kind of like, and this is what I said to him, I was like, Akanji right back, Stones, Diaz, Ake.
That's exactly the back four I said.
That is it. And that is the kind of chef's kiss emoji, which there isn't. But you know, it's that. It's like the A-OK emoji. That is the
and
one.
Then...
and then fucking Akanji gets a knock. Again, he might be fine by then. By the time people listen to this, Stones may or may not be all right. But I messaged him again when Stones was off injured. Quoted it. I was like, that was a fucking pipe dream, wasn't it? Like, what's the lineup going to be if those three are out? Mm. Again, that's like the negative way of thinking, but like, and he was like, you know, Ivan Guardiola. I was like, I went down the whole thing. People know what I think about Guardiola.
Yeah.
And I like the benefits. I see the cons. But like, if he plays, then we'll see that. But like, we'll see either one of those. We don't know. Ake and Diaz at centre back. Okay, fine. And then whatever the right back would be, yeah. But Lewis. Then you'd like to think the Akanji knock is an international, yeah. Kind of. Yeah, see you later, lads. Now, the thing Rodri said after the Newcastle game, he was, oh, yeah, we'll go away with our national teams now, but hopefully we can rest. He was like, we've all got friendly games. And it's like, well, if that's the mentality, fair play. I mean, not really fair play. If you were like the national team manager, you'd be like, can you put a bit more effort in? Mm. But it's good from a City point of view to know that, like, this is the man who's like, he's fully in on City. And that when it gets to the Euros, he'll be fully committed to them. But he knows, well, I don't know, which side his bread's buttered or whatever. I'm not doing a Spanish bread joke. Which side his pan's buttered. I am doing it. And then it's just I'm so bad at transitioning. I should do that Dara O'Brien thing where it just goes, and then like change the subject. If I start doing that in a podcast, making the noise sounds like a cow and a sheep, then you know that's how I've developed my delivery of jokes. But it's like the players have gone away, and you know when players, it's that thing. It's like, oh, Saka withdraws from the England squad. You think, you bastard? But it's like if Foden withdraws, you go, oh shit, he might have a knock, but hope it's nothing. Mm. And that's the kind of feeling. Like, you'd hope that's the case with Akanji, because Akanji, Diaz, Ake, Guardiola, it's not the end of the world by any means. But those four I mentioned earlier, they're the ones. And again, the only thing with Walker going off injured, and if he's out for a period of time, which doesn't sound like he will be, the first thing you think of is Vinicius Jr. Mm. But then, like Nathan's question originally, like everything else, like, is he going to play that well against Vinicius Jr.? Because I might be completely wrong, but the perception I had of him at Anfield was he was just turned up to 140%. Mm-hmm. It's like he's just going to do something mental here. Like against Chelsea, when he was like, I need to steam across the top of this. I'm like, no, you fucking stay on Sterling. Like whoever's Akanji or Ake, whoever it was, they can do that. Like, just dial it down a bit, mate. But we'll see.
We'll be back in a few minutes after an ad break. Speak to you shortly.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Let Me Talk is sponsored by you, the listeners.
The best way to support the podcast is by subscribing via Memberful.
You can pay as little as £2 per month, which gives you early access to all our podcasts ad-free, and they're packed with even more content.
That gives you even more minutes of us to fill up your week.
Subscribing is really easy, and the longer episodes will integrate seamlessly with your podcast app of choice, be it Spotify or Apple. Head over to lmtpod.com for more information on signing up and links to all of our socials.
You mentioned tickets as well. We should address the ticket price rises.
Well, you're doing it properly on Blue Moon, right?
Well, yeah, we did a little bit last week. We're going to do a little bit more, kind of around about the same time as this comes out, actually. So we won't go kind of too in depth. I spoke to Nick from the Food Bank. Spoke to Dante from 1894.
Well, again, people who listen to us might not necessarily listen to that. And
yeah,
but like,
yeah,
exactly. You've spoken to people. You've got voices on it. I've written an article. There's enough kind of offshoots of work we've done, which isn't necessarily this. I'd like to think, you know, this. In this case, if you want a full deep dive on it, then, you know,
you've got your Athletic article. Right?
You've got the Athletic article, you know. Also, like, I've listened to, I didn't manage to get through it all, but there was the MCFC 9320 podcast by Andy Savage. That was a good debate between, you know, people who are connected to the club, either as fans or as like fan groups. Ian Cheeseman's podcast, very similar thing. Mm. Like they had a guy on from City Matters, which was fantastic. Different fans with different connections. And again,
there's a lot of discussion out there.
That's the thing. Like, and also like these forums for that conversation, dare I say, not necessarily the forums you might expect for complaints about ticket rises, because obviously there's been loads of fans. And the reason I saw Andy's had done something on it is because I saw a follow-up tweet about him saying there's been a lot of pushback from people saying they're just complaining for the sake of it. But the thing is, now there are more people saying, well, hold on a minute. There are more people who would in the past go, well, I can pay this. And look, the thing is, what I found is the vast majority of people, they're going to go anyway. Like 1894 are saying, if you can renew it, please do it. There's no boycotts. They're saying, please do it, because they think the season tickets are being phased out completely.
Yeah, well, this is the issue. And like I spoke to Dante about this because...
And there's so much. This article, fuck me. I was in like a proper maze for like 5 days with it. Like.
But there's the element now that fans are actually caught between a rock and a hard place, because if no new season tickets are being released, and you know, if you
which is the case since the pandemic,
if you drop off your season ticket, then you're going to go to the back of the waiting list, and you're also not going to get that. There's not new ones being made available, so you're not going to get it back anytime soon. So if you want to keep it, you've got to pay more money. Hmm. And so like your decision is, do I pay more money or do I just accept that I'm now not going to have a season ticket?
Well, this is so... I was always doing the devil's advocate thing. When I spoke to these guys, it was like, well, you're making the point, you know, the football club should be different, you know, there should be loyalty, should work both ways, you know, the fans are always there with... I was like, just the devil's advocate, like, it's a business though, isn't it? And then everyone I spoke to had a very good answer, like, yeah, but, you know, they want loyalty from us, it should work both ways, there's a captive audience, you know. If I can't afford an iPhone anymore, you go and buy a Samsung. Mm. That's not going to work in football.
And also, energy prices is the other one. You know, we are consistently told if your energy bill is too high, go and switch.
Yeah.
You know, look elsewhere. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if your season ticket's too high, you ain't switching it. You ain't going to another club.
You just got to do it anyway. Because I was playing devil's advocate. And the way I'm going with this is I was saying, well, it's a business, isn't it? And the other thing is, even if you don't like it, you're going to pay anyway. Mm. Because if you can't afford to, you will. Because like obviously, like 1894 got this thing of no new season tickets being made available. And one thing, I've got so many different tangents here, I'm going to have to remember what my original one was. But obviously, you, via the Blue Moon podcast, you put the question to City and they declined to comment on it. They just gave you the general guidance, which was, you know, it's an average of 5%. It's like £1.30 a game or £2.30 a game or whatever. And then, there was stuff in the article where it was like, the club are motivated by greed. They're trying to reduce season tickets. They want, like, people at the club want us being City. I'm speaking from, you know, the point of view of the fans.
Yeah.
They want us to have the same match day revenues as Arsenal and Spurs and Chelsea and United and Liverpool, which is obviously mental for, like, it's London prices and it's a global fan basis with United and Liverpool, which we know City don't have yet. Obviously, you could say City are trying to cultivate that now, but, you know, and I was like, I need to put these things to City because, you know, these are claims of, you know, what's being said within the club. And like, I was like, it's going to be interesting because if they reply to me, but not you or, you know, the fans, then like, where are we at? And then they were like, oh, we will reply by the end of the day. But then I got three things back and it was like, two were like the generic things that were sent out last week.
Yeah.
And there was just another one saying, in terms of making the season ticket numbers reduced and trying to phase out, the one thing they did reply to and kind of address was with the Flexi Gold ticket, which again, people hate because it's... Mm. Maybe we will explain it in a minute, but with that does grow the season ticket numbers because they say that goes out to existing citizens members. They will be offered that opportunity, so it's like that was useful context to have, like because 1894 are so certain. And obviously, look, there'll probably be a way that 1894 or whoever else, the food bank lads, whoever, City Matters could say, yeah, but actually it's this. And obviously, like the thing with the Flexi Gold ticket is, from the club's point of view, you don't have to have a season ticket to every game and then say, I'm not coming to that one. Mm. So you sell it on the exchange. And again, in terms of the different tentacles of this, the exchange, you know, 1894 and the food bank are called for a boycott of it. Because if you've got a season ticket, you pay for the 19 home games.
Mine works out, I think it's £40 a game. It might have bumped up to £50 a game. My maths isn't great.
Okay.
I did. Somebody asked me, and I did work it out. It's something like I think it's 48 a game.
Okay. That it works out. So then, like, if you sold a ticket, you'd get 48 quid.
I'd get 48 quid.
But then, like, the thing is, like, This is the thing, but you always get the example of like, if it's a cheaper ticket, you sell it for maybe 25 quid again, you get 25 quid back, but then City will put that on for 50 or 60, or like, you know, if it's United or something, I don't know. Real Madrid, what, has it got to 70 before Real Madrid? I think it kind of has. Obviously, it wouldn't be Real Madrid if it was a season ticket, but that kind of thing. And they, people aren't happy with that, but so what you get with the Flexi Gold ticket is, it's almost like you don't have the seat, but you can say, yeah, I'm going to this one, and I'm going to that one. I'm going to that one. And then if you don't, that seat's not yours. So then the club can sell that. Mm. And then, but also you got to pay 150 quid extra. So if you do want to go to every game, you're paying for every game. The club message you say, do you want to go to this? You go, yeah. You go to every game. You're paying 150 quid extra for it. And the club wanted to make it 190, but City Match, well, that's a bit steep that. So they brought it down. But then,
at the same time, I think the T's and C's of the Flexi Gold mean that you, like, you don't automatically qualify for a season ticket at the end. You don't automatically qualify to renew it. That's something.
That was something else that came up as well. But I was like 3,500 words. I was like, how much more stuff can I put in? I didn't even have time to talk about like, the Istanbul report that the club didn't like. The club facilitated a meeting with UEFA, but like, didn't comment on it. I know fan groups were disappointed about that because it's like, just support your people. Do you know what I mean? Like, Guardiola says, we want our people. There's obviously the ticket issue thing, which we're talking about. But there's also like, well, support your fans. You went to Istanbul and had to stand for 3 hours with no fucking water. This kind of stuff. With the Flexi Gold situation as well, you can paint it from the point of view of, this is just a club trying to make as much money as possible from that seat. So you've got to opt in to go to that game. And if not, they're going to sell it for a higher price. Mm. And you could say, this is what they want or whatever. But then, on Ian Cheeseman's podcast, they had Mark from City Matters explaining, and I went and confirmed this as well. He was saying, because obviously with City Matters, he gets the figures from the club. And it's an interesting dynamic with City Matters, because obviously they're pissed off about the rise as well and about certain other things. But like, they do obviously get, there is a bit more balance to it in terms of, like, there is like operational reasons within City. So they were saying, the example that Mark gave was, 16,000 season ticket holders didn't go to the Burnley game in midweek in January. And he said around half of those listed it or transferred it to friends, or 8,000. The other half, around 8,000, he said.
Just didn't go.
And it's like, and he said the average amount of games attended by season ticket holders per season is 14. So it's like, you can see from the club's point of view why they want more agency over those seats. Because especially like, and this is difficult because if you're on the side of the fans, and obviously the way I've written the article is you've got to give balance, but like, these are legitimate grievances, I think, in the vast majority of cases. And you've got to listen to them. And obviously, if the hardcore fans are pissed off, then they're pissed off. Yeah, they might be right, they might be wrong, but if they're pissed off, someone's got to change. But at the same time, if you're making the argument that, and I've long forgotten that other tangent, by the way, that's long. if you're making the argument that prices should be cheaper and season ticket holders should be more looked after, and you've got other fans making empty ad jibes, but the reality is a lot of season ticket holders aren't going. You can see why City, it's not, the thing is, does it surprise anyone if like Ferran Soriano goes, we've got to make as much money as we can to match our revenues to these guys, to grow the revenues, whatever it is. But if City fans say, look, we've got a big problem with season ticket holders not going, we need to do something about it. You can kind of see it as well. Again, maybe the Flexi Gold paid 150 quid on top. Do you necessarily have to do that? That is growing the revenues for the sake of growing the revenues. And that's when you get back to the element of, That's when you get back to the element of like, are they just squeezing as much money out of this seat as possible? Like, again, it was on the Ease and Cheeseman podcast, one of the guests, and I'm very sorry, I can't remember who it was, but he was saying he gets texts like 17 times about, are you going to the United game? Are you going to the football game?
I get those.
Because, and he's like, and Mark went, do you know why they get that? And he was like, well, because like, I think this is what he said. Because they want my seat to resell it. And he was like, no. And then he introduced this fact about season ticket holders not going. So you kind of see it from that point of view. But anyway, so when I was talking about all these tangents and I was trying to put across like, well, it is a business, even though, you know, the fans have got very good arguments why it shouldn't be. And my other point of view is, even if you don't like it, you got to go. They got you by the balls. I was thinking, you know, fish over a barrel kind of thing. The best quote I had was from a fan I spoke to who didn't want to be named. And he said, they got you by the bollocks and the heart at once. And that is perfect. Mm. Because it is both, isn't it? Like, the heart is. Like, this particular lad, he was like, when he saw, he was going on a silver ticket, couldn't no longer go because he was going to be, he didn't want to do Flexi Gold, he was going to do gold. But the price difference was 300 quid. And he was like, I can't do that anymore. But he was really pissed off and upset about it. So it got to the point where he spoke to his family because they saw how upset he was. And his dad was like, look, you've been going, he's 31, like you've been going all your life in different ways without a season ticket, getting tickets here and there, like as a lot of people will do, as I did fucking in my day of Death Star activity.
It's part of the empire.
Yeah, exactly. So in the end, the dad was like, look, I'll pay the money. I think he's like arranged like a payment scheme to pay him back, which is a bit more favourable than, you know, to pay soon. I think you do have, to be fair, a delay thing where you can pay until July if you need a bit more extra time. But I think he's got a bit more time to pay that back. And that's just a good example because it's not, because people have been priced out and people keep telling me, I couldn't speak to any, I couldn't get hold of any of them. Mm. But people keep telling me I've got mates who can't go anymore. So a good example would have been speaking to one of those, going, oh, I stopped going 4 years ago because I can't afford it. Mm. But speaking to somebody who would have stopped going, but can't, and as their family, because of that emotional connection, has had to bail them out so they can go, I think is a great example of what we're talking about. And his quote of got you by the bollocks and the heart at once is perfect because they have, like, they can squeeze whichever organ we're talking about because they know you're going to want to go. It's not like switching from iPhone to Apple because you have got that emotional connection.
It's just not the same dynamic. And the one thing I would say is when it comes down to it, we were talking about the charges before. Let's say, God forbid, the verdict comes back
guilty.
This is
something that's come up a few times. Why they get relegated.
And they're expelled from the Premier League. They're actually expelled from the Premier League to the point where they're chucked into League Two. Who's going then?
Yeah, this is what people say. But I do find a funny thing when I tweeted my article this morning, Wednesday, as we're speaking. There was more quotes about it and it was generally supported. I've not checked since. He could be a load. You know, all the people who are having a go, Andy, if they're having a go, Andy Savage, what the fuck are they going to say about me? You're not. Christ. But like somebody quote tweeted it. And this is a lot of things that fans were saying to me. Oh, you know, if things go wrong, who's going to be going then? It's still funny in that City psyche. The things are going to go right. I think other clubs...
When things go wrong.
Because I think United maybe because of like experience. Mm. But I think if you were to... You know, Liverpool have obviously had walkouts in the past. You know, that game against West Brom. Mm. Which again, backfired really from a kind of solidarity viewpoint because they fucked it, didn't they? And West Brom scored, one or two late goals and people thought, oh, we're not doing that again. Which kind of shoots right through the idea of like proper fan action. But, you know, I don't think you'd necessarily have Liverpool fans go, oh, if it goes wrong, who's going to go? They just go, they're just taking the piss out of us financially, which is fine. But it's just funny with that City psyche of when this all goes to shit again, who's going to be there? It's just funny that you would have that inbuilt, but of course you have.
Yeah.
But the thing is, would it even cross their mind? Like, it might not have crossed the fans of Liverpool's mind. Would it even cross the minds of Soriano and whoever else? Because they're not thinking it's going to go to shit. Because Al Mubarak's like, well, this is the business plan. Mm. We're committed forever. We're going to bring in this, this, and this. And look, it depends what your definition of going to shit is. Is it relegation or is it just finishing fourth after Guardiola leaves? Like, I don't know. But like, there is obviously an element of people keep saying, like, when Pep and Haaland go, is the draw going to be the same? And like, would it be the same if City do have like two seasons when it finished third?
My answer to that all the time is, when I fell in love with this club, it was already at its worst. Like, what's it going to do to me?
But it is a very valid point, isn't it? Like, even if it does get to that point. Because the thing is, I talk about the definition of going to shit. It doesn't have to be relegation, does it? Mm. Because if you're going to games now as a tourist, as a day tripper, as somebody like from... Because obviously the other element is everyone's gone out of their way to say, this isn't like a racist thing. Mm. It's a, you know, whatever. And like, the guy I spoke to was like, there's loads of like middle class British white people going to games who don't support City. And the Community Shield was a good example of that. There was a comment on the article saying, I went to the Community Shield, it was full of Arsenal fans. Mm. And there was another comment on the Ian Cheeseman podcast. The guy said he was stood behind a guy who had Foden on the back of his shirt. And the guy turned around and said, which one's Foden? Like, this is the kind of thing we're dealing with.
Yeah.
So if City have a bad season, which is finishing third after Guardiola goes, and they have two of those, are those people who are paying 50, 60, 70 quid a ticket now to come in going, are they so keen to do it? No, they're not. But again, you guys, the secretly pervert who want the club to get relegated, like, of course you'll go. Like, of course you'll go. So, I mean, those arguments do make complete sense of what happens if it does go wrong, or even if it just levels out a bit. Because this success, this is my consistent argument for years. Once Guardiola goes, it will be different. And maybe I'm wrong. But, you know, that's my argument against, oh, well, they just spent so much money, so it's inevitable. It's not. The difference is Guardiola. So for me, there's inevitably going to be a drop-off, and I may be wrong. But yeah, the people who are turning up to see City and and see Haaland and see Pep and see this amazing football. If the amazing football's not there anymore, if Haaland's gone, then the attendances will drop. But it's because, but you know, it's not going to be like, oh, all the hardcore start coming back because the prices will still be too high. Mm. So again, that's what I was saying earlier on. If the hardcore are pissed off, rightly or wrongly, you've got to have a look at it. And again, it's not like we talked about the global fan bases of United and Liverpool. To be fair to United, attendances haven't dropped off, and the amount of you know, it's a joke among City fans and other fans, isn't it? Like, there's the amount of, maybe I'm one of them subconsciously. You know, I've got my reasons, which we talked about. You know, the job's different and blah blah blah. The amount of United fans who go, oh, I don't really get on with the team anymore.
Not the same anymore
because the shit. Yeah. But the attendance is still the same. Old Trafford's still full. They're still selling everything. They can still put the prices up. But that's the thing. With United and Liverpool, they can even afford to do that. You know, the amount of protests and stuff. United, to be fair, they did a proper protest and got a game called off. Still sells out. Like, you know, City had their boycott of Wembley, which was 500 fans giving money, gave 15 grand, which was very successful. Sold 33,000 tickets anyway. Mm. But it was to people who aren't City fans. And then United and Liverpool. So, you know, if City are looking at it going, we need these revenues that London clubs have got, that Arsenal, Tottenham, Chelsea, Liverpool, United have got. It's, you know, there's reasons why they have got that, but particularly United and Liverpool, because they can be shit for 10 years like United and still have the attendances. Liverpool have obviously gone the other way in that period, so we don't know. But they still have people going and going and going. But yeah, if you are picking up people who are a bit more casual about it at City, you know, if this is a new fan base you're developing, or they come in because they do support other clubs, but they want to see City, I'm not sure the stadium is going to carry on being full if the football isn't as good, just, you know, based on what I'm hearing from the fans. And again, there is an element of, with the club, you know, if you put it from the point of view of 8,000 season tickets aren't going to a match, they want to do something about that. And to be fair, the people who defend the club from empty ad jibes, they'll probably want something to be done about that as well. Mm. So I'll get that element. But there's loads of things the fans have said about, you know, how, and like, you know, just even the communication of it, because ultimately they just want it to blow over. Because they know it's going to get a shit reaction. They know that journalists can pile it. Normally, like, you know, I'm not piling into City every week about FFP, but I'm writing an article about the season tickets because I feel like this, you know, this is something directly back to fans, and we'll see. But they'll know this is a bad week for PR. We'll keep our heads down. We'll wait for it to blow over, and it will blow over, because to bring us back full circle to the Arsenal game, no one's going to be talking about season tickets, whatever the result on Monday morning. But especially, like, it is a bit like the FFP stuff. Literally, how often would you want me to write about this? If I'm talking to another journalist who's talking about how it's this and that, how often would you want me, as somebody who writes about City three times a week, to mention this? Mm. How often is this relevant? And obviously, fucking up, if they're found guilty, then it's a different conversation. It's probably all the time. But it's like, let's say, going back to Arsenal, they beat Arsenal, they go into battle mode, they win the Premier League, they're in the FA Cup final, they're in the Champions League final. How often am I moaning about season tickets? How often am I saying, yeah, but the fans are unhappy? How often are the fans letting it be known that they're unhappy?
How often are because the fans...
Because it's long since shelved. It'll be shelved after the weekend.
But also, imagine how often are the fans... The fans then have to battle with being pleased with what's on the pitch, but displeased with what's off it. And how do you square that circle? Because there's a lot of fans who... Like, I don't know what my emotional capacity is to be able to deal with that. Like, honestly, I don't know. I don't know if I can cope with being as dissatisfied as I have been with City off the pitch this week.
Well, this is interesting, isn't it?
And watching them win everything.
Because there's probably an element for some people where, like, even if they are guilty of all the FFP stuff, there's probably fair to say there probably are fans out there who just don't care anyway. And I think we've kind of seen that demonstrated with, oh, it's set up by the cartel and all this kind of stuff. But it's like you can kind of act without the rules within a footballing sense and not care, but then it affects when it's hurting your own, that's harder to square that circle, and there's different emotions at play there with it as well. But again, it's just that thing, isn't it? Like, you probably have, I don't know, maybe I'm completely wrong, because this definitely won't be the case for like every person I've spoke to, but there definitely will be people, and like, I would be the same if I was in the same boat, because I'll just be like, well, fuck it, I'll just pay whatever. Even though they're taking the piss, if this is our fault, then, you know, just keep paying. But then let's say they do win the treble again, Barney Rooney's nightmare happens, and the City fans are like, you're just not thinking about the ticket prices, or even you might even think, even if you're fully against it, there is an element to start to think, well, you know, it's worth that extra £2.30. Mm. You know, because
I was there.
You're just there, like you are over a barrel. They have got you by the heart and the balls and whatever. Like it's just as how it is. Like that's the reality of the situation. The reality is it's a business, and the reality is that they know that fans will pay up. And again, that's the official position of like 1894 because of all the other good reasons. But the other reason is the club don't really care if you can't go or not because someone else is coming in at the minute. But obviously that's the throw forward, isn't it? Like if it's like the Community Shield, if it's like people have been complaining about it. I haven't noticed the atmosphere be particularly bad this season. But a lot of things that fans have said this week and I've seen before say the atmosphere is suffering because there's more people turning up to games who don't have that emotional connection to City. And again, like, in terms of like the tourist element, I've said this before, even when we weren't in this mode. Like, you know, when there was, so the Real Madrid tickets last season, like, again, I get the, like, how unfair it is for somebody to sign up on that day just to go want to go and watch City Real Madrid and you're getting a ticket instead of somebody who's been all the time and they couldn't get it. That's, and obviously, to be fair to City, this time you need to have been to at least two games this season in the Champions League. So they did take steps to sort that out. Within all that kind of, oh, you know, people are buying tickets for the first time, there is obviously an element of some of those people are City fans who are desperate to get to games. It just so happens they can get to a Real Madrid game. Yeah. It also doesn't, you know, because there's almost an element of...
Because there should also be a dynamic where in which people can go to that.
It is accessible.
Yeah, yeah.
I think City Matters have addressed this at some point saying, you know, that is obviously understandable, but maybe there is an element of you need to do the hard yards. You can't just turn up for Real Madrid, maybe. And that's probably fair enough, isn't it? It's like, if you are desperate to go and see City...
Burnley at home.
Then go and see Burnley at home. Yeah, there are tickets going for that. And I think that's a fair argument. But it's that thing of, like, tourists. And this isn't what the point people have made, but it's that element of, oh, tourists, this and that. It's like, there are people who are like, they might have a different accent, but they obviously supported City forever and they've come from around the world to do it. But there's this idea that they don't contribute to an atmosphere, but this is just because this is the stereotypical branding of certain people based on how they look or how they sound. But it's like you might have a Ted Lasso type American who can't wait to fucking start singing. And it's actually awkward sometimes because you've got, who's this American guy trying to start singing about? But you're not, but it's like they're dead keen to get in on it. You're an Australian guy who's like, they're dead keen to do it just because they're from a different place. It doesn't mean that they can't create an atmosphere. But like, look, that's something that everyone I've spoken to has been very keen to point out. But it's like, it's obviously the Tottenham debate. There's been a lot of complaints about like South Koreans or whatever, but it's like, no, they're there for Spurs. Like when I was in Korea, there was loads of Spurs shirts because of Son. Like they do support that team. But yeah, like everyone's got to be careful. I'm not saying the people I've spoken to haven't been, but everyone's got to be careful. Like there are tourists who are desperate to get involved and make that atmosphere as well. But obviously the issue is you've got, like the fan said, when it's just like people from anywhere, whether they're from China or they're like middle-class British people who just want to turn up and watch City. That's the issue then. Of like, well, have they got any interest in making the noise? And again, in the Tunnel Club, like, there's always fans from the other team in there, but they pay fucking like 1,500 quid or whatever it is to go. You can't turf them out. Pay 1,500 quid, but then like, what's the atmosphere coming like from there? Mm. Never mind. It's City fans, whether they're there ostensibly to watch City, but they do sing or they don't. These guys are there to watch Wolves. They're celebrating when Wolves score. Like, there's that as well.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, but obviously they pay 1,500 quid, so the club will have them back. The club will have anyone who's paid 1,500 quid for one match. Or whatever the price is, you know, 800 quid, 500, whatever it is, it's a lot, isn't it? Like, if you're paying more than somebody pays for a season ticket for one game, they'll have you back.
That's it for this episode of Let Me Talk Details. If you want to ask us a question or send us a voice note, get in touch on Twitter, Instagram and TikTok. Just search for LMT Pod. Or you can send us an email, hello@lmtpod.com. All the useful links are in the episode description and over on lmtpod.com. Thanks for listening and see you next time.
Let me talk! Let me talk! Let me talk!